This meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will come to order at 1:32 p.m. We are here in the Belts Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building. Today is Friday, February 10th, 2023. Members present joining us via the team sub, Senator Merrick, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Bishop, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off and silence your cell phones. I'd like to welcome and thank our recording secretary, Carrie Cooperrider, and our LIO moderator, Jake Wade. Today, we will continue our exploration of workforce issues in Alaska. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce. With us today, we have Director Sylvan Robb with the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing to talk with us about the workforce challenges from the perspective of her division. On January 24th, we heard from DCCED Commissioner Sandy, where we heard about challenges faced by the department and a little bit about CBPL. Today, Sylvan will drill down into her division. Ms. Robb, thank you for joining us. Could you please come to the podium? Thank you very much. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Yes, thank you, Chair Bjorkman and members of the committee. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today to talk to you. For the record, I'm Sylvan Robb, and as Chair Bjorkman just mentioned, I'm the new director for the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing, commonly referred to as CBPL. I started with the division on January 3rd, knowing that I was coming in to face a decision to assist a division facing serious challenges to help find solutions to resolve many issues we currently face. And that's what I'm here to talk to you about today. Given that I just started on January 3rd, I also ask my deputy, Glenn Saviors, to accompany me.
Hi, Glenn. Thank you for joining us, Senate Labor and Commerce. You bet. Ms. Robb, would you prefer that we hold our questions till the end of your presentation or ask them throughout?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Feel free to ask questions as we go.
Very good. Please continue.
Thank you. So moving on slide two, let's begin with an overview of the division for those of you who are not as familiar with CBPL. So CBPL is comprised of five sections, three of which are in the division name. So those five sections are corporations, business licensing, professional licensing, so no surprises there. And then the other sections are our investigation section, as well as our administrative support team. I'm going to briefly cover what each of those sections do at a high level. And then on the next slide, I'll also address how many licensees we had at the end of fiscal year 22 and what type of increase we saw over the last year and over the last few years for each of those sections. So the corporations team processes registration applications for corporations, official filings, amendments, and initial and biennial reports for corporations operating in Alaska. They also register trademarks and maintain corporate reporting records. The business licensing team processes hard copy applications for business licenses. They maintain the registry of all business licenses, assist with questions from the instant online business application. They assist with other business licensing questions and also grant endorsements to sell tobacco or nicotine products. The corporation and business license sections are staffed by a team of seven people. Moving on to professional licensing, that team has 53 members, including some non-permanent staff. And the professional licensing team processes applications for the 45 programs per Title VIII and the associated regulations. They also obviously issue professional licenses. They process interim documents, such as reports, disciplinary action filings, requests, change of name and address, changes in license types, those sorts of regular actions. They also process all the renewal applications for each program every 2 years. They create and test the initial and renewal applications and all the associated forms. They answer questions about professional licensing programs, applications, statutes, and regulations related to those programs. And they also respond to calls and emails about the professional licensing program. They also staff and provide assistance to the 21 licensing boards, including administering 1 to 3 day board meetings several times each year. They travel to national conferences to gain knowledge on national trends and issues. And of course, there's much, much more. We have an online databases with search pages for both corporations, business licenses, and professional licenses that allows anyone to check if a corporation is registered in good standing and who owns that corporation, if a business license is active and who the owners of that business are, and then for professional licenses, if the license is active and if that individual has had any disciplinary action. So those are the three in our name. Then moving on to the investigations unit, that's a staff of 23 people, and they investigate complaints that are submitted to the division regarding violations of license laws for both licensed professionals as well as individuals who may be practicing in an unlicensed fashion. They enforce the licensing statutes and regulations for businesses and professional licenses. They work with the boards and division leadership to advise disciplinary action when there are violations of the law. They work with law enforcement agencies when that's appropriate, generally related to complaints regarding criminal matters related to a professional license. They also answer questions related to investigations, all while maintaining the statutorily required confidentiality. And finally, our administrative support team is comprised of 24 people. They process all of our mail, faxes, and payments that come in for all of the units within the division. They request and arrange travel for staff and board members, including travel between division offices for board members to attend board meetings, as well as national conferences. They manage the program's financials and the travel plan for each of the boards. They handle all the administrative tasks like payroll, budget management, hiring, and much more. They also assist with the email management and answer questions from applicants, licensees, and members of the public. And this group also includes our publication team, which keeps our website and all of our forms updated, as well as our two regulation specialists. So including myself, my deputy director, and the assistant, there are 110 positions in the division, which is inclusive of 7 non-permanent positions. Moving on to slide 3, you'll see that the division has experienced substantial growth in the number of registered corporations and licenses issued. As you can see, over the last 4 years since FY19, we've experienced a 21% increase in registered corporations, which brings us to the number we have today, which is 92,000 registered corporations. We've seen a 36% increase in business licenses and endorsements. We have just shy of 100,000 registered, licensed businesses. And we've seen a 24% increase in professional licensing since FY19, which brings us to over 104,000 professional licenses. It's worth noting that in the last 10 years, professional licensing has experienced a 64% growth in the number of licenses issued. It's important to note that the numbers that I just shared with you are not inclusive of the number of applications that were submitted and processed, but then abandoned or withdrawn before they got to the point where a license was issued. It also doesn't include the support documentations, interim reports that are due for a number of licenses, renewal applications. We're really a volume business over at CBPL. That also comes with an accompanying increase in the number of emails, faxes, phone calls that we get from people, especially as we're operating in an age where people have come to expect, you know, very quick responses. While, you know, Amazon's not delivering things for us the next day here in Alaska, but people still sort of have a mentality that, you know, I should get an answer immediately. And finally, with an increase to all of these sections, we've, of course, also seen an increase in the work that the administrative team does, as well as the accompanying increase in investigations that you would expect with an increase in that many licensees. I did want to note, we have not been charging for business licenses during the pandemic. That fee was reinstated on February 1st this year. So with all that said, we know that a lot of the committee's main focus today and interest is in professional licensing, and so the rest of the presentation will really focus on that section of the division. So here on slide 4, you'll see that of our 45 professional licensing programs within the division, there are 21 that are regulated by licensing boards. It's worth noting that among those, they offer 181 different license types. The boards are comprised of volunteer members who are appointed by the governor and approved by the legislature, confirmed by the legislature. And then we also have 24 additional programs that are regulated by the division, and those programs offer 81 different license types. So within those 45 programs, they have over 250 license, permit, certificate, and endorsement types. And among those, there are over 400 different pathways to get some of those. And so by a pathway, I mean, how do you qualify to get the license? So you can qualify by having been a practitioner in another state and already having had a license, or if you're a new graduate, then you have to provide that information to us. So just for one example, and a good example of what one of these 45 programs can can be comprised of, is the dental licensing program. So a dentist can be licensed by examination level 3, which is for a dentist who's never been licensed anywhere else, examination level 2 for someone who's been licensed something between 90 days and 5 years, and then by credential, which is a dentist who's been licensed elsewhere for over 5 years. We also have a dental hygienist license, which can be obtained through those same 3 pathways. Dentists can also obtain a permit to administer moderate or minimal sedation, a permit to administer deep sedation or general anesthesia, and both types of those permits can be obtained through multiple pathways. Dental hygienists can also obtain a certificate to administer local anesthetic agents, a certificate to provide nitrous oxide, endorsements to perform restorative functions, two of which can be obtained through multiple pathways. And while the dental board doesn't regulate dental assistants, if a dental assistant wants to perform coronal polishing or restorative functions, they need to obtain a certificate from the dental board to do so. There's also a temporary dentist permit, a courtesy dentist license, a courtesy dental hygienist license, military temporary courtesy licenses for both dentists and hygienists, collaborative agreements between dentists and dental hygienists, and soon there will be specialty dentist licenses and advanced dental hygienist practice permits due to legislation that passed last year. All of these items require separate applications, so there's not going to be a quiz on how many dental licenses there are, but we wanted to go through the list to illustrate just that when we talk about having 45 different licensing areas, that there is a great deal contained in each of those 45 areas. So even after all of those dental items I just mentioned, in addition to that, the dental board approves many course types. They have to approve the coronal polishing courses, continuing education courses for dental licenses, continuing education courses for moderate sedation permits, and so on and so on. And each of those have their own requirements, pathways, approval applications, and require a different set of supporting documents. So the point is that one program can require significant knowledge from staff, many license and permit types, and many applications and forms. And a good knowledge is required of the program statutes and regulations in order for staff to work through all of that. And some of the programs have regulations that exceed 50 pages. So there's a lot to know. So as the slide explains, most of the programs are staffed by a single Range 14 licensing examiner. And so that person not only handles all of the work that I just detailed, but in many cases will also staff the board. Examples where we have one staff member providing all the staffing for a professional licensing area are professional counselors, chiropractors, occupational and physical therapists, massage therapists, social workers, and currently dental, although we are soon to have a second dental staff person related to the bill that passed last year, expanding the number of licenses that are available within the dental program. Some of our larger programs do require additional staff. So an example of some of our licensing teams is the nursing team, which is a 9-person team that's headed by an executive administrator. And while 9 sounds like a lot of people, nursing has 28,000 licenses. It's over 25% of our professional licenses are covered by the nursing team. So that team puts in a lot of hard work. They do overtime. And even with all of that, we have not been able to get our processing times below 2.5 to 3 months from the time an application is submitted to the time it's initially reviewed. Other teams that have multiple people are pharmacy, medical, and the construction contractor programs, who also have teams, though they are less than half the size of the nurse license program.
Stop 1 minute. Question from Senator Bean.
Thank you. Welcome this afternoon. Good to see you. So you've been there a month, and your trustee aide's been there a little bit longer. What's the solution on the nurses to go eliminate, you know, try to pare that 2.5 month period down?
Through the chair to Senator Bishop, we feel that the best solution to solve that problem is the Nurse Licensure Compact. And if you're willing to wait, we do have a slide on that later in the
I know it's in there. Notwithstanding that, what's the solution for getting it down?
Through the chair to Senator Bishop, the thing that has been the biggest challenge for the division recently has been a lack of staff and an extremely high turnover. So given the breadth of knowledge that's required that I just sort of illustrated for you, the turnover in staff is really slows us down. There's a lot to learn. Speaking from experience as someone who hasn't been there very long, there's a great deal of information required. And I think in addition to the institutional knowledge that you lose as people exit the division, there's also efficiencies. You know, I think everyone can understand, you know, if you make a recipe that you've made 50 times, it's much faster than when you made it the first time. And so in the same way, when staff are processing things that they're familiar with, it's just quicker than it is when they're doing it for the first time.
I have two parts in this. What are the exit surveys showing, and what range is this a range 14 as well for the Board of Nursing?
Through the chair to Senator Bishop, if you're asking about the executive administrator,
Just the rank and file that's processing the applications.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, our occupational licensing examiners are range 14.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Senator. Chair Bjorkman, just a follow-up on that. I mean, has there been a discussion about increasing that range for those employees, and what would be the process of doing so?
Thank you for that question. Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, we are looking at, and we will get to later in the presentation, some of the ways that we're trying to improve situations for our staff. So we are looking at reclassifying, which is how we would change the range for those individuals. So classification is a unit that's within the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations of the Department of Administration. And so we would have to work with them to make sure that it continued in line with the merit system for state employees. But we are looking at having a broader class study done. And additionally, the division is working to reclassify some of our positions to really create a better path within the division, so that when people have acquired that knowledge, there's a career path for them to stay within the division and to be able to advance. And so we're excited to be able to get that classification work done so that we can hang on to people who have learned a lot of the stuff and all kinds of things that I'm still learning myself.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I hear you mentioned in range 14 pretty often right now, and all the responsibilities that go along with being a range 14. First, I'm glad there's going to be a class of pay study, but what's the salary on a range 14? Just roughly.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, I'm sorry, I don't have that information off the top of my head, but we'll certainly supply that to the committee.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Finally, before we move off of slide 4, I just wanted to say that the division is receipt supported. So per statute, the fees are set based on the cost to run each of the licensing programs. And that includes processing all of the documents and applications, answering the calls and email, staffing the board meetings, as well as investigating the complaints. And so we've already sort of, you've given me a very good segue into the next slide. So before we get into some of our staffing issues, we just wanted to give you an overview of what programs the division does regulate. So here you'll see a list of our board-regulated programs, of which there are 21. And I do want to mention that that comes with 136 board members if all of the board seats are filled. And I can't let an opportunity to go by without saying thank you to all the Alaskans who take their time to serve on our boards. It's a big commitment. A lot of people sort of think board service, four meetings a year, and yet some of our boards have work that they need to do on a weekly basis. So we really are very appreciative of our board members. For the board-regulated programs, you may be wondering about the separation of work between the board and the division. Each program is structured slightly differently, so I'm going to be generalizing. But for the programs of the board that have a board, the board is responsible for setting the regulations that govern the practice of the profession, as well as the required continuing education within the parameters of statute. In some cases, the boards approve each new licensee. They also review issues requiring discipline and impose sanction. Some boards also review and approve continuing education courses. So then the flip side of that is, if that's the board's duties, what are the division's duties? So the division employs staff for the board that include the work we do. We notice the public meetings, arrange the space, and travel for the meetings, distribute the board materials. We take the minutes and record the meeting and then ensure that those are posted to the website so that everyone has access. We can act as an advisor to the board about their allowable courses of action in some circumstances. The division also obtains the completed application packets from applicants. We review and process those and then work with the applicants if they have not submitted all the necessary documentation or have not submitted it in the manner that's required. We forward those completed application process to the board, and they give it the final review. The division investigates complaints and reports of misconduct or individuals operating without a license. We forward substantiated reports to the board for sanction. We maintain the updated forms, regulations, and website with accurate and up-to-date information. We collect the fees and review the expenses in order to set those fees at the appropriate level. We process the renewal applications, create the new forms and processes as regulations change or statutes change and new license types are created. And we assist prospective and current applicants and licensees with all of their questions. The simplest way of thinking about the division of work between the boards and the division is that the boards regulate their respective professions and the division handles the day-to-day and the administrative side of things. If I can circle back for a moment, Mr. Chair, I've been helpfully provided an answer. A Juneau-based Range 14 begins at just below $50,000 a year.
Sorry. Thank you.
And thank you to the Deputy Commissioner for a lifeline. So as I mentioned a moment ago, it's important to note that while many of these programs sound like they only regulate a few license types, there may be a lot more to it, as you can see on this slide where we've listed the number of license types within each of these boards. It's important to note that the license type numbers include different types of licenses for each profession, so there can be a permanent, temporary, courtesy, etc. As I mentioned earlier, these numbers don't include the military temporary courtesy licenses that exist for almost all the programs, except for guides and transporters, marine pilots, and some of the licenses under the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. It also doesn't reflect all of the continuing education course approvals, approval of collaborative agreements, and a lot more. So I'm going to give you just one more example. I promise this is the last time I'll do this. But just the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers. So you can see here that they have 22 different license types. And as you might expect, they regulate barbers and hairdressers. No surprise there. But also estheticians, non-chemical barbers, hair braiders, hair braiding courtesy licenses, manicurists, manicurists with advanced endorsements, body piercers, tattoo artists, cosmetic permanent colorists, apprentices, students, instructors, schools, salons, shops, mobile units, and temporary shops. So we have a few boards in addition to barbers and hairdressers that regulate firms or facilities and not just professionals. And those include the Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, the Board of Public Accountancy, the Real Estate Commission, and the Board of Pharmacy. So here on slide 6, you can see the list of the 24 programs that are regulated just by the division. So again, the number of license types shown here don't include the military temporary courtesy licenses that exist for all of these programs. There are a couple things on here that may jump out at you as not being a license for a person or business type. So the one you'll notice on the right column is the prescription drug monitoring program. That's under the Board of Pharmacy, but it's regulated and managed by the division due to the fact that it requires its own staff, separate from the Board of Pharmacy staff. It requires a hands-on approach that can't be provided by volunteer board members. And the PDMP, as it's shortened to, touches six of our regulatory boards. And the other thing on here that is not something that is for a person or a business is the telemedicine business registry. And that's a registry for businesses that provide telehealth services in Alaska. And people need to register whether they are located in or out of state.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it does occur to me that I think that there are some additional boards that are not within this division. Is that right? So the one that leaps to mind is the Police Standards Council, for example. How many other of those kind of professional boards exist that are not under your purview?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, in terms of occupational licensing, you are absolutely correct, and that's a good thing to point out, that we do not license everything, as you noted. We don't license sworn officers. That's housed elsewhere. Teacher certification is handled by the Department of Education and Early Development. I honestly couldn't venture to say how many other things attorneys are handled by the Alaska Bar Association. And that's part of the reason that we did want to give you the list of the things that are within CBPL, because it's not everything. It's a lot, but it's not everything.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So here on slide 7, we'll circle back to some of the discussion that we started earlier. It is no secret that the division has struggled to keep up with the volume of work. There's one primary reason for this, as I mentioned earlier, and that has been a lack of staff and a high rate of staff turnover, and just that huge loss of institutional knowledge. So the top of the slide repeats the information that I shared earlier about the increases we've seen in licensing. Just to give you a little sense of what that means in terms of actual licenses, it's 61,000 additional corporate registrations, business licenses or endorsements, or professional licenses that the division is processing from that increase since fiscal year 19. So division-wide during that period, we've seen a 26% increase in volume. And we've had an accompanying just 7% increase in PCNs, which includes some non-permanent positions. During the worst period in the pandemic, we had over a 35% vacancy rate in the professional licensing team. So we're very thankful and pleased to be able to report that we've turned the corner on that. So from a high of over 35%, we've seen that decline to a 20% vacancy rate at the end of fiscal year 22. And we're down to a 14% vacancy rate right now. So again, I just want to repeat that because it's had a huge impact on our ability to serve the public, as well as staff morale and just general operations. So we went from a high of over 35% in professional licensing to today we're sitting at 14% vacancy. So things are definitely trending in the right direction. And as we shared, with 261 different professional license types, most of which have multiple pathways to get those licenses, it's easy to see how big the impact of staff turnover would be. So even with our success getting positions filled, we're still recovering. As we look back at the turnover, we had a 55% turnover rate in the professional licensing staff. So that's just a whole lot of new people who are still trying to get up to speed and get familiar with, you know, as I mentioned, in some cases, as much as 60 pages of regulations for their program. Before we move on, I really need to take a minute and just thank the staff at the division who stuck with us. I don't know if any of you have worked somewhere where there were a lot of vacancies, but it gets harder and harder because you're asked to do more work. You know that you're not providing the level of service that you want to. And so our staff did an amazing job. And we just can't say enough. And, you know, these are Alaskans serving Alaskans. They're very committed to helping people get their licenses so they can get to work and get their business licensed. We're also really excited about the new staff that we have. We've gotten some great people who are really excited and jazzed to be part of the team, and we're looking forward to moving forward with that group.
Very good. Senator Bishop has a question.
Thank you. Again, do you do exit surveys of your employees that leave? And if you do, is there a trend? And the great people that stuck with you, have you surveyed them, and how many of those have a defined benefit or defined contribution plan?
Through the chair to Senator Bishop, and I realized after we had moved on that I did not address that question earlier, so my apologies. Thank you for bringing it back up. The state of Alaska does exit surveys. They're voluntary, and I will be honest, in the month that I've been on the job, I have not dug into the exit surveys to see what they're saying, but I think it's an excellent suggestion, and truly I will look at those because it's a really good suggestion to see. And I don't know if Deputy Director Saviors has anything to add.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. I don't have a whole lot to add there. I would say that some of our staff just kind of leave trying to get all of their work done, so they don't always do the exit survey. I haven't seen them myself. I think we could see what we could pull together and follow up with you. So I can't speak, you know, it would be very anecdotally. We have some staff leave for promotional opportunities in other divisions. Some are retired. It's been a big range, but we could follow up and see what more specifics we could give you.
And just to follow up, Mr. Chair, and be curious, I mean, I'm not running the show over there, but be curious to see what the ones that are staying, why they're staying, right? Is it the DB plan or a DC plan, or, you know, just might be a good time for a pizza party and have a conversation with your staff.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Bishop, it's a great suggestion. Moving on to slide 8, I think we've talked about this quite a bit at this point, so we won't spend a lot of time here. But we did want to give you this chart that shows the types of positions that comprise the professional licensing team, the ranges of those, and then the numbers of the positions that make up that team. I do want to note that the 4 administrative assistants that you see here don't process applications, but we do certainly consider them part of this team because they assist with emails, setting up licensing files for the occupational licensing examiners to review. This also doesn't reflect our administrative support team, and we could not get our work done without them. They deal with the large wave of incoming mail, faxes, phone calls, emails that we get, and so they are a crucial leg of our stool to keep things moving smoothly. Here on slide 9, you'll see 2 graphs. And again, we've covered a lot of this, but we really wanted to share the chart showing our vacancy rates since 2018. This is a snapshot of our vacancy history as a division, which is what you'll see on the left. And then on the right, you'll see it for one of our critical job classes, occupational licensing examiners. And that is the largest group of staff we have. We have 36 occupational licensing examiners. So you'll see that the over 35% vacancy rate I was talking about really reflected in that chart on the right. And you'll also see that we're really getting back toward a more normal rate of vacancy and turnover, which we're very thankful for. So moving on to slide 10, we wanted to talk about some of the efforts we've been making as well as some of the successes we found. So the division is taking steps to improve the way we do things. As you can imagine, with the numbers we've covered, with almost 300,000 licenses and corporate registrations, we're really a volume business. And so any way we can find an efficiency, even if it's something that's just, you know, shaves 2 minutes off the processing of something, if you think about that across the breadth of all of those transactions, it really does make a difference. So some of the exciting steps we're taking is we're working to get applications available online. Obviously, with over 250 different licenses and then multiple pathways for each of those licenses, that's a lot to get all of those online. We can report that 46% of all of our initial application events were started online by the applicant. So we're trending in the right direction there. And finally, the biggest licensing pool, as I mentioned earlier, the Board of Nursing licenses 28,000 individuals, and all of their initial applications are available online at this point. Additionally, 100% of our renewal applications are available online, which has been a huge improvement for the division as well as for our licensees. Other examples that we're working on is with our database. We now offer people can submit some of the primary professional licensing verification fees. So when other states, in the same way that we check with other states to see if you had a license there, when people need a license verification from us, we used to charge $20 for that, and it required staff time. And now people can go online and verify that license. So that's saved a lot of staff time. License certificates are now can be printed directly by the licensee directly from our online self-service portal. It's called My License, and it's part of the My Alaska system. And licensees and applicants can update their mailing addresses and email addresses on record using that My License portal. So again, each of these little things, you know, even if we only had 5,000 people who wanted to update their address in a year, that's still a big improvement to be able to allow people to do those things in an automated fashion online. We're also constantly implementing enhancements to our internal licensing database. We've been able to allow licensees to upload required documentation that they need to share with us. So different professions, some of them require monthly reports. Others have to submit annual or biannual reports. And all of that can now be uploaded by the licensee directly into the portal. We're also working to reclassify a number of positions, like we talked about earlier. And I won't reiterate that, but we're really excited about getting those reclasses done, especially for taking some of the board work off of our occupational licensing examiners and putting that with a higher level of staff, asking Range 14 staff to review statutes and regulations and staff a board doesn't feel like an appropriate fit. So we've reclassed 5 of our records and licensing supervisor positions, which is kind of the next level above those occupational licensing examiners, into we've created 3 program coordinator ones and 2 program coordinator twos that will help provide supervision and oversight to those programs. And we're really happy to report that we've already got 1 of those program coordinator ones and 1 of the program coordinator two positions filled. So we're well on our way. The others we're in the middle of recruitment for, and so we're having good luck getting positions hired, which is very encouraging. We're also happy to report one of the things that has happened is that the commissioner's office at the department has created a board advisor position. As I mentioned earlier, we have 136 board members. And that position is currently held by the former director of CBPL, Sarah Chambers. And she's working to help boards with their training, advising board members about their roles and duties, and assisting staff working directly with boards on their roles and responsibilities as well. And that's been very helpful because 136 people can have a lot of questions, and many of them are frequently new to their roles. So it's a great new position for us. The high vacancy and turnover rates we discussed in the previous slide, we had really a great team atmosphere in that everybody was jumping in to help cover those vacancies. I know the former director was. I know that the deputy director was helping to jump in and get licenses out the door. So we were very focused on trying to get licenses issued as quickly as possible.
Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions on vacancies. And, you know, it's certainly inspiring when managers step in and do the job of or help frontline employees, but it's not really how our divisions and departments are supposed to work, right? It's an emergency solution, but not something that we want to encourage in any way going forward. So I guess a couple questions is the vacancy. So what's the sort of average length the positions have stayed vacant? And I know it varies, but if you give me some sense of, you know, a couple of months, couple of years. And then second, this is my first term. I wasn't here for the budget process last year, but I believe that there was a recruitment incentive that was passed and then vetoed. And I just could you walk me through what happened there, if that is indeed what happened?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, it would be very hard to say what the average vacancy rate is. We've had some positions that we've been pretty successful in getting filled, you know, kind of as quickly as you can, with the time that's required to have the position posted and then get interviews done and references checked and then someone giving 2 weeks notice of their current position. But I do know we've had some positions that have been vacant for more than a year. We could try to come up with an average vacancy rate. It might be helpful to talk to you about what the parameters were of, you know, if the position was filled and then became vacant again. But it really depends on the type of position. In terms of recruitment incentives, I wasn't with this department or division during the budget cycle last year. We did not have any recruitment incentives related to the division from last year.
I guess my question for the chair, for anyone else who wants to, not right now, but in the future, is, was that because this body didn't fund them or because this body tried to fund them and then it was vetoed? That's an interesting question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the other improvements that we've made and that we're kind of in the middle of is we're reviewing options for better ways to handle the examinations that we have to offer to applicants for certain professions. So a good example is the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers. Those exams used to be conducted in a physical location, and they obviously required an in-person proctor that was hired by the board in order to offer those exams. So the division contracted with a vendor to allow licensees to register for the exam as soon as their application is complete. They can take it online and have it graded by the vendor in order to streamline that exam process. We're also looking at some of the other exams that are still managed and administered by staff or boards. So some of the other programs that require exams are the Big Game Commercial Services licensing exams, and they have a number of exams. Marine Pilots requires exams, as do morticians and a few other programs. We're also working across the division on streamlining and cleaning up our regulations. So we recently put out a regulations project for public comment related to the requirements for an electrical administrator or mechanical administrator license that reduced the required items that didn't really serve any purpose toward ensuring public safety or credentialing. They just sort of served to create delays. And you'll soon see a regulations project cleaning up outdated language, unnecessary requirements, and removing or updating fees that we don't need anymore now that services are offered online. So, for example, the fee I just mentioned when we did a license verification. Now that that's available online, we don't need it in regs to have $20 for a service we no longer offer. We're also continuing to push our boards, especially with the help of that new board advisor position that the department created, to amend regulations that create unnecessary burdensome requirements or any of the ones that are a little bit hard to understand. So we want to make it as easy and straightforward as possible for our applicants to figure out what they need to submit and how they need to do that.
I just wanted to. Senator Bishop's question spurred another win that I think is worth mentioning, which is the Board of Nursing and the State Medical Board amended their regulations last year so that a temporary permit was an automatic part of the licensure process when you go for a permanent license. So once you have the pieces that you need for that temporary license, that will automatically be issued now while we're working towards that permanent. And that kept people from having to submit a permanent application and then go back and say we want a temporary. It really has helped. It does create a tiny bit more tracking on our side, but it does reduce the number of applications that are coming in, and it is getting our healthcare workforce into hospitals and healthcare facilities quicker. So I think that's another win, is where our healthcare boards really looked and said, what can we do to streamline? And we are seeing other boards looking at being able to do similar things.
Glenn, that sounds great. That sounds like a great solution. Thank you for offering that. To that end, so did I hear you right in talking about nurse licensure specifically? When someone who would like to come to Alaska or is in Alaska and would like to become a licensed nurse in Alaska, they can basically show that they had been licensed in another state, and then you will give them a temporary license?
To the chair, it's not quite that simple at this point. We do need a handful of things shown to be able to get the temporary license. The pieces that we can wait for until we get that permanent license are verifications of employment that come directly from those employers. That was a piece we saw really delay because that's coming from a third party. But still, because we don't have the nurse licensure compact, it's not as simple as having a license elsewhere. But verifying that they have a license in good standing without disciplinary action is part of the few steps that they need to reach to get that temporary license. And if it would be helpful, we can absolutely follow up with exactly what's needed for the temporary permit versus the permanent license.
I think that would be helpful and would speak to the need of compacting in regard to that profession specifically. And certainly if the goal is to join the compact, if before we can get there, if we can provide a stopgap measure that would say, hey, if you're a nurse in good standing in one state, what's stopping the state of Alaska from giving you a temporary license until you can get licensed here in the state?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee?
All right.
I have some more.
Oh.
So I'm just kind of wondering about the onboarding process for your examiners and what that looks like. Within the last 10 years, there's been a lot of change to kind of in-person travel availability around the state and how training opportunities work for employees that are kind of coming into state service, especially at an entry level, like a licensing examiner under Range 14. Could you talk about how that process looks now and how that process may have changed from years past?
I can't answer about years past.
Yes. So to the chair, so I have been a deputy director for a year next week. So, but I have been around the department since the very end of 2015. I was the director's assistant, and I was the department's ledge liaison, and now I am back with the division. So I have some experience. I can't speak. I was never involved with the training until the last year. So I just want to explain that. The training is really morphing right now. We're really trying to go off of feedback that we're getting from new examiners to see what their opinions are of where it really helped. We really rely a lot on Aspire Alaska's trainings as far as here's how you learn Excel, here's how you learn Outlook, here's how you learn Adobe, because those are systems that they use. And then our supervisors, or sometimes myself, our administrative operations manager, basically people up in management, will come in and do further. Here's how you organize your inbox. Here's how you handle multiple inboxes. We talk through with them the difference in statutes and regulations and how to read those and who to go to within the staff when you're really trying to understand. Some of those are easier to understand than others. Big effort that we're making that is very much in the early stages is for management to go in for each program and look at what is required and what could we do to simplify or maybe extend but simplify the checklists that our licensing examiners use so that they can trust that management has reviewed the laws. You can trust the checklist. You're basically going through and looking for these different elements. So the training is really something we rely a lot on our records and licensing supervisors and our program coordinators on. They spend a lot of one-on-one time. We try as much as we can to take the I'll do it, we do it, you do it approach, which is where, you know, the supervisor would do it themselves and have you shadow. Then you'd work on some things together, and then you would have the licensing examiner process. But before they get to the point of actually contacting the applicant, we would look at it to make sure that everything was by the book. So that's a bit of the piece. A lot of it is a lot of shadowing right now. When we have more supervisors, we have a big plan to have a lot more trainings. We do bring licensing examiners to Juneau or Anchorage if they're located elsewhere for a week or two to do on in-person training with us and to be able to get time with everybody within the management team.
Very good. So the shifts that you were talking about in training, are those shifts toward more online training or more in-person training? What are those shifts specifically looking like?
To the chair, that's a great question. It's a lot more, I would say, online-ish. It's more of Teams trainings where we're recording. The long-term goal here is to have very wonderfully put together trainings, but at this point, we've realized that with our short staffing, that thankfully is going the right way now, it became quicker that if you're training a staff on something, hit record, save it in a shared folder so that we can all be able to have access to that and use that. When we create instructions, when we send emails that tell you how to do something, we'll print it to PDF and save it into the files. So we're doing a lot of sort of that's where when I'm saying a morphing. The in-person trainings really comes down to, we expanded to recruit in Juneau, Anchorage, and occasionally Fairbanks for our positions because of our vacancy rate. And so in-person depends on where is the supervisor located, where is the person that, you know, the licensing examiner located. And so it shifts, but we're doing a lot more online and we're trying to do a lot of recordings so that we can make sure that people have access to those resources if maybe they need a recap, but supervisors are also a little bit busy, or we can refer them back. So we're shifting more towards online, but it's more of a still hands-on sort of an online versus just a training for everyone sort of thing. But that's the direction we're headed.
Understood. In a world where many people have discovered the nature of online learning, it'd be interesting to see the effectiveness and reception of online learning that your employees are experiencing. And what I'm concerned about is the effectiveness of online training and what that results in for quality of service and the amount of time and effectiveness that examiners are able to really put forward to the public in turning around licenses. In my profession, we have quite a bit of experience with online learning lately. It's not been real great.
Yes, and to the chair, I think my only comment there would be that I guess I should clarify that really what I'm talking about that goes online is really more of that preliminary. Here's how you use our database. Here's how you do. This is that general. When it's actually getting down to processing applications, that's much more one-on-one with their supervisor.
Excellent. Very good. Other questions from the committee? Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So here on slide 11, this is really the biggest question that we've been hearing from the legislature. What are other states doing, and what can we do to significantly improve licensure processing times so that we can allow professionals to get to work quicker that doesn't increase costs or the danger to the public? The answer is interstate licensing compacts. So compacts are a state-based approach to multi-state licensure that uses a vehicle for interstate collaboration. So these are contracts between two or more states that establishing agreed upon requirements on the qualification to get that multi-state license. The most powerful, durable, and adaptive tools for ensuring cooperative action among states are these compacts. And they allow for professionals to practice between states while ensuring that the quality and safety of services. They also safeguard state sovereignty. So compacts are not a takeover of state licensing. They preserve state control over health professional licensure and minimize or preempt federal intervention. They allow states to ensure quality and safety of services. They safeguard state sovereignty as Alaska retains full jurisdiction over the professionals practicing and or licensed in the state. The scope of practice continues to be determined by the licensing board within the state. And the state licensure processes remain in place. So licensees can choose whether they want to become part of a compact or retain the single state licensure. So state practice laws are not impacted by these compacts. The multi-state license holders are required to abide by the laws in the state or the states where they choose to practice. So compacts are not owned or controlled by any organization. They're governed by a statutorily created governing infrastructure that's determined by the member states through the terms of the compact. So compacts are an instrument of interstate cooperation governed by appointed representatives in each of the adopting states. And the commission's members are appointed by and represent each of the member states. So each state's legislature who's a member of the compact must adopt the compact into their statute. So it defines the terms and conditions of the compact. And that means that no organization can change those terms and conditions without each state's legislature either agreeing to adopt that, or the state that made the change would drop out of the compact. So compacts allow for significant improvements in the time it takes to get licensed professionals into vacant positions in Alaska. And it also allows the freedom of movement across states for those individuals who have those compact licenses. This is especially enticing for younger graduates who are just getting out of school. We've heard anecdotally from nursing schools in Alaska that students talk about leaving the state once they get their degree in order that they can get licensed in one of the compact states and then be able to move about as a traveling nurse. Not only this results in students leaving the state to start their careers, but it also significantly reduces the chances that they'll return, as most compacts require you to have residency in one of the states that belongs.
Thank you. Senator Bishop has a question. Oh, Senator Dunbar has a question.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think actually the director was in the process of answering it, but I kind of wanted to touch on two things. You said something earlier about sort of state sovereignty, and then you explained it in a way that I think I understand, but I want to sort of clarify how these compacts actually work. So if we were to agree to join a compact, we have to write some of the requirements to join that compact into our statute. So if at a later point we decided, this doesn't really work for us. This is the lowest common denominator, and we actually want more requirements on, choose your medical professional, for example. What you're saying is the recourse would be we would have to change the statute, and then we would drop out of the compact. Is that true?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, that's correct. So the compact language has to be adopted without change, which prevents any one state from, raising or lowering the standards that you alluded to. So if a state wanted to make those changes, then they would be removing themselves from the compact through that action. And likewise, if the compact was going in a direction that Alaska was not comfortable with, we could likewise drop out.
And then you mentioned earlier in the presentation that this division is funded through licensure fees. If we're in a compact and we are, it's a lot of folks are practicing here, but their license is in another state. Is there a mechanism for being compensated for that? And if not, are we worried that it's going to significantly reduce the amount of licensure fees to the division?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar. So the fees that we charge for professional licenses are set based on what it costs us to do that licensure. So if we had people who were coming up to practice in Alaska who didn't yet need to renew their license, we would not incur work until the point at which they renewed. Then they would be Alaska residents, and Alaska would charge that fee. Did that answer your question?
Can I ask a follow-up question to that? But there are other functions of the division, right? The disciplinary functions, for example, staffing the boards and commissions. Do those licensure fees also go to those portions, to the later disciplinary? And if not, it seems like there might be a challenge there. We're reducing our revenue, but not as quickly reducing your workload.
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, So the nurse licensure compact is the compact which the division has fully vetted. And that's a great example because it's one that we've looked at it from every side. And so we know the details of it. So in that case, the option is you can either be an Alaska licensed nurse or a compact licensed nurse if the legislature were to adopt that legislation. And those fees would remain separate. So nurses who had a compact license would pay for investigations related to other nurses who had a compact license who were practicing in Alaska, and then Alaska licensed only nurses would only be responsible for investigations related to other nurses who only had an Alaska nursing license.
Can you one follow up on that, Mr. Chair? So who is doing the investigating of the compact nurses? Some compact organization, is that what you're saying?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar. No, those investigations would be conducted by our investigators. For violations that occurred here within Alaska would be by our investigators.
Okay, so in the compact nurses or whatever, or they'd still be paying some kind of fee then?
That's correct, Senator, through the chair. They would have their own licensing fee for a compact license. So kind of in the same way if you go to the DMV, like you can get an Alaska driver's license or a real ID compliant license, and those come with different charges. If you wanted an Alaska-only nursing license, that would have a fee, and if you wanted a compact eligible nursing license, that would have a different fee. And so each of those groups would pay for the cost of their own investigations for things that occurred within Alaska. So, and Glenn is our resident expert on nurse licensure compact, so I hear her intaking to say something, so jump in, Glenn.
To the chair, the only point that I wanted to add on was the fact that As Director Rob said, the nurse licensure compact is the only one that we've thoroughly vetted. And so we plan to do that with any compact that's really brought to the table, because you want to make sure it's really right for Alaskans, because that's our top priority. And so one of the questions we asked the national organization that connects all of these states through the compact is, what kind of percentages are you seeing where investigations are happening in other states? How often are you seeing fees go up? It's basically not happening for any of the 39 states that have joined, because the standards to get a license in as a multi-state license are actually higher than they are in most states. Can't have any felonies, can't have any misdemeanors related to nursing practice. You can't have any disciplinary on your license. They're the squeaky clean licensees. And so I think, just to reiterate Director Rob's point, the reason that in a nurse license to compact bill, you would see the compact under a different chapter of statute than you would under the single state license is so that we can ensure that, okay, even if there does come with investigations for these multi-state licenses that come into Alaska, we make sure that if fees happen to be impacted by that in the very hypothetical situation, that it would be the people that wanted those multi-state licenses whose fees would go up and not those single state licensees here in Alaska. And the reason for that is that still, if they pay more than a single state license, it is still a lot more cost effective for them than having to renew a license in all of the different states that they perhaps practice, where they want to continue to hold a license, where they get continuing education, or they have to renew. And so in the example of our Board of Nursing chair, she only practices in Alaska, but she's also an educator. And she has to hold licenses in multiple states. She has to renew those each year. She has to meet their continuing education requirements. It's a much bigger cost for her. So that was why those fees were set out separately, was to make sure that if fees went up because of other state nurses coming into the state on the compact, that it was only impacting people who also wanted multi-state compact licenses.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please continue.
So here on slide 12, you'll see a map that we pulled from the Council of State Governments website, which shows how many occupational licensure compacts of the six that are shown on this slide, and I apologize, it's a little bit light to see, each of the states has joined. So to date, over 40 U.S. states and territories have adopted occupational compacts for nurses, physicians, physical therapists, emergency medical technicians, and or psychologists. So there are more compacts in the works for other professions, such as massage therapists, cosmetologists, audiologists, speech-language pathologists, and more. And those are not shown on this slide. But when you are looking at this slide, you can see that Alaska is one of just 9 states that has yet to join a single one of these occupational licensing compacts. And it makes it especially difficult for us to get qualified professionals who want to come to Alaska on a temporary or permanent basis. So the licensing compacts would greatly improve our ability to get professionals into Alaska where it's appropriate, without sacrificing the quality of service, safety of Alaskans, or our state sovereignty. And Alaska is part of many compacts already, just not related to occupational licensing. So I think in her presentation to the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, Tammy Perot, who's with the Department of Defense, said that Alaska is part of over 28 compacts that govern things such as the placement of children, adoption, military education, mining, taxes, and National Guard mutual assistance. So the idea of joining a compact is not something that's breaking new ground, but it would be new in the occupational licensing world. But obviously, it's not a new thing among states. We're one of just 9 who haven't joined any of these yet. And as Deputy Director Xavier just noted, we're supportive of compacts in general, but not all licensing compacts are created equal. And so we don't want to take a position on individual compacts until we have had a chance to check them out from all directions to make sure that they're the right thing for Alaska. And the one that we have done that on is the Nurse Licensure Compact, which we'll talk a little bit about on the next slide. So let's talk about, here on slide 13, this compact that we have thoroughly vetted, the Nurse Licensure Compact. So joining the Nurse Licensure Compact will allow Alaska-qualified nurses to choose, as we just discussed, whether they want a single state license here in Alaska or to get a multi-state license. And again, as we just heard, the standards for that multi-state license are higher than those for an Alaska-only license. So there's really no risk to standards of care or public safety. The financials would be separated, again, as we just talked about, for those pools so that people are not paying for people with a multi-state license. And there are 39 jurisdictions who have already joined the Nurse Licensure Compact, and another 7 have legislation pending to join, and that includes Washington and Oregon. This committee heard from Jared Kosin with the Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association a couple weeks ago, that we're looking at a grimmer future related to nurses. So we currently have 1,500 RN vacancies within Alaska, and that's 24% of the RNs at those Alaska facilities. We're projected to have the highest nurse vacancy rate per capita in the U.S. by 2030, and that's looking at over 5,000 vacant nursing positions. So Alaska's accredited nursing programs here in the state produce 324 RN graduates each year. And 11% of the total healthcare workforce in the state in 2021 were non-resident healthcare workers. So that's 5,000 non-resident workers. We also have found that 23% of the non-resident healthcare workforce goes on to attain residency in Alaska. So giving people this opportunity to come to Alaska and love it, like many of us have, is a great opportunity for us to entice people to the state. So if you couple those numbers with the fact that we're told by Alaska nursing schools that many graduates voice the intention to leave Alaska in order to obtain licensure in one of those 39 Nurse Licensure Compact states, and that would give them the freedom to work as a travel nurse without having to pay and apply for a license in each state, wait for that license to be issued, meet all those continuing education requirements, and then remember to renew, with each state having a different renewal date. Additionally, because you can only obtain a multi-state or Nurse Licensure Compact license in the state in which you are a resident, these graduates opt to attain residency in other states. Alaska not being in the Nurse Licensure Compact also discourages Alaska graduates and non-resident nurses from coming back to Alaska, or at least establishing or reestablishing their residency here, as it will result in the loss of their multi-state license and require them to again begin applying for and obtaining licenses in each of the states where they want to work. If they want to provide telehealth services, if you want to get additional skills, you need to get those other state licenses if we're not part of the compact. It's also important to note that Alaska, as we just talked about, but just to reiterate, that we would retain state sovereignty with the Nurse Licensure Compact. The Alaska Board of Nursing, if we were to join the compact, retains the right to govern the practice of nursing in the state of Alaska, and they can revoke practice privileges in the state, regardless of the type of license held. So whether somebody had a multi-state license or an Alaska license, if they have violated the statutes or regulations, the Board of Nursing is able to take action. The board wouldn't have unanimously voted to support the Nurse Licensure Compact multiple times, nor would the Dunleavy administration have championed it if it resulted in a loss of state's control or our rights.
Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you had mentioned, you know, I think all of us want to increase the number of nurses here. And you're saying that not having this compact sort of disincentivizes people from staying in Alaska because they go to other states and get this kind of license. Do you have, number of states have joined and some haven't, so that means we've got a natural experiment where you can do regression analysis. Do you have statistical evidence that states with, you know, have joined this compact retain a larger number of their in-state nurses?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, I don't have statistical evidence, but as we're looking ahead with 39 states already joined and 7 more considering it having legislation, as we become one of the, you know, last remaining holdouts, it's very concerning that it would be challenging to get nurses when it's so easy to be a nurse in so many of the other states and territories. And we want to be clear, like, no one is saying that joining the Nurse Licensure Compact is going to magically create nurses. I mean, we know that across the United States, there's a nurse shortage. But given that reality, we would like to make it as easy as possible for nurses to come to Alaska and work here.
So may I ask a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously there isn't a bill before us yet, but perhaps there will be soon. Before that happens, could your division perhaps, or someone, you know, look at some states that might be analogous to Alaska? Nobody really is, but maybe someone like North Dakota, Idaho, Maine, you know, more rural states, and maybe Hawaii hasn't joined yet. But and say, you know, you could say, you know, before and after, did this effect that you are hoping for, did it actually happen in these states once they joined the compact, or did they start to be a net exporter of nurses?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, we'll definitely provide that information to the committee.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So one of the things we want to point out is that we're, as I think we've said, but just to reiterate, we're not just all in for all the compacts. We like the idea and concept a great deal. But it's worth noting that the Alaska Board of Nursing did not support Alaska joining the Nurse Licensure Compact originally. So you'll notice the top of the slide says the Enhanced Nurse Licensure Compact, and that enhancement happened in 2018. So when they did that, the Nurse Licensure Compact upped the standards that were required to obtain a license. So they started requiring federal background checks. They disqualified anyone with a felony conviction, as was mentioned earlier, a misdemeanor conviction related to the practice of nursing, or any disciplinary action on their nursing license. So we do want to note that these licenses would still qualify for a single state license. So they weren't kicked out of work. And that's one of the things when we're looking at compacts, we want to ensure that anyone who's currently working in a profession in Alaska, that we don't implement standards that would prevent someone from continuing to operate in that profession by joining a compact.
Senator Gray-Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remember this entire conversation during the last session, probably one before that, and it was the Board of Nursing that was against this compacting, wasn't it? Or it was someone. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
through the chair to Senator Gray-Jackson, the Board of Nursing is very much in support of Alaska joining the Nurse Licensure Compact. As I just mentioned, they were not in support until the compact was enhanced and strengthened so that the requirements to for nurses who have that multi-state license is actually higher than is required for just an Alaska license.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chairman?
You may.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember them not being in support of it. So I guess my question is, when did they change their mind?
It was through the chair to Senator Gray-Jackson. It was after the enhancement, which was in 2018.
Okay. Oh. Can I follow up one more time, Mr. Chairman, please?
I think Saviors wants to.
Oh, okay.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Gray-Jackson. I think what you're recalling is that the Alaska Nurses Association has been the opposing organization for the Nurse Licensure Compact, and actually, Director Rob is going to just briefly cover kind of what they're.
That's it. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So the enhancements were decided upon by the elected officials for each of the member states in that compact. And then, again, each member state's legislature had to adopt those changes into their statutes in order to continue to be a member. And those that did not were kicked out of the Nurse Licensure Compact. And there was no grandfathering in. So there was no, you know, you already had a multi-state license, so you can continue to have one. And the only state that opted not to adopt those changes was New Jersey. And so they exited the compact, and they have subsequently rejoined. And so they adopted the higher standards required by the Nurse Licensure Compact as it exists today. Every state has the option to exit from the Nurse Licensure Compact at any time. So all that would need to happen would be to repeal those statutes, and then we would return to just having the existing single state licensure that we have today. And this was just mentioned, but the Alaska Nurses Association is opposed to Alaska joining the Nurse Licensure Compact. We're not entirely clear why they are. They're the only healthcare organization in the state that's opposed to that, to joining. So as Mr. Kosin mentioned from AHA, over 75 organizations have stated that they would like Alaska to join the Nurse Licensure Compact, including all of our hospitals and healthcare facilities, the APRN Alliance. So with that said, understanding that there is this opposition, we did sit down with AHA and the Nurses Association over the interim and said, okay, let's put Nurse Licensure Compact to the side. Let's figure out how do we solve this problem that we have right now that as we project ahead, we see just getting worse. Let's figure out what else we can do. And the group was not able to come up with any solution. that speeds the processing time. You know, we need to maintain public safety, and there's those groups all working together were unable to find any streamlining options. And so we find ourselves back with the Nurse Licensure Compact. So the Board of Nursing has already adopted every change that was proposed by that group. And one of the things was already mentioned earlier, the automatically issuing a temporary license when someone reaches a certain point in that initial licensure process to get people working faster. So the picture for nursing, just to give you a full vision, as I mentioned earlier, we have 28,000 nursing licenses. But that doesn't mean we have 28,000 nurses in Alaska. We don't obtain information on if people are working or where they're working. But that's 28,000 applications that were processed by staff, the renewal applications that are processed, in addition to all the applications that are processed by staff, but that end up getting abandoned or withdrawn before they reach the point of licensure. So the nurse licensing team is more than double the size of any of our other licensing teams in the division, and they still work a significant amount of overtime. So they have one executive administrator for that group, one records and licensing supervisor, a nurse consultant, and then six licensing examiners, as well as a permanent administrative assistant and one part-time non-permanent administrative assistant. And just for some scale, the next largest team is the medical team that has an executive administrator and three licensing examiners, although they could use some additional support. And despite that team's hard work, nine people, it still takes 2 to 3 months from the date an application is received until the time it's processed. So, and if the application is incomplete upon that initial review, and many times they are because there are a number of requirements and documents need to be submitted in a certain fashion, then that restarts people in that waiting time. You know, a lot of people would say, why don't we just prioritize those? But with 4,500 nurse license applications in process, going through in the order things are received really seems like the only way to ensure that we're being fair. So we do process in the order that things are received. So if we join the Nurse Licensure Compact, it will reduce the number of applications coming in for the Alaska Nurse Licensing Team, which would potentially result in fewer staff being needed on that program. excuse me. And so if that happens, we could see the fees for Alaska nurse licenses actually reduce, because again, the amount of the fee is based on the cost to run that program. So fewer staff, less cost, lower fee. The other benefit to that, especially as we look at, you know, infrastructure money and a lot of things that are happening in the state, is that would free up some of our licensing staff who could work on other programs. So we know staff watch these presentations, and I just don't want anyone to be nervous that, you know, if we join the compact that they would be out of a job, because we need every person that we have at CBPL right now. So no one needs to have any concerns.
Ms. Rob, I have a question. It occurs to me, as we've had this conversation a few times, that there indeed seems to be, by accounts and experience, a nursing shortage. However, the demand for nurse licensing in the state of Alaska in the last 3 years has skyrocketed. If we have a nursing shortage, why is it that there is such a demand on new nursing licensure in Alaska? What those seem to be non-compatible.
Mr. Chair, we don't track where people are working or if they're even working, the people who do get a license. We were all here during COVID and remember the, you know, influx and the effort to get additional staff to come up to the state. So certainly without having any actual data, that seems like it may be a cause, but I would be loath to speculate too far without having actual information on why the great increase in demand.
Understood. And just from having this conversation with folks in the industry and hearing and thinking about impacts on your division specifically, I wonder if the root cause of the workload to your division is something about how the healthcare industry operates? And is it something about market forces within the industry that causes people to move around and work in different places and demand more licensure in different states. So as I notice those things, I wonder if the industry shouldn't take steps, or maybe the legislature encourage the industry to take steps to do something to address the root cause. And as I think of people from my local hospital tell me that they have a number, over 20 traveling nurses working in their hospital currently, and at that point in time had 7 positions open to travelers and were offering upwards of $150 an hour, which is substantially more than those Range 14 licensing folks get, to work there. I wonder if the root cause is that just folks that work for $150 an hour don't need to work a whole lot. It's just things I wonder as I notice things. So as we kind of make choices in the marketplace and we kind of, you know, drive up the cost of government, and we have increasing now demand on what your division does, is that because of market forces and choices made within that market by the people that work there and the structures that employ those folks? Something I wonder. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's quite a bit of incorrect information circulating about the Nurse Licensure Compact, and we realize that this has created some opposition. And so the main thing that we would ask of you and your fellow legislators is just to keep an open mind about it. So if you hear some talking points about the Nurse Licensure Compact that you find concerning or that you have questions about, we would be happy to talk with you about it. And we will say that if there's a reason that we see that the Nurse Licensure Compact is not right for Alaska, we'll be the first to back off, but we have yet to see that. You ask what we needed, and this is the answer that we're seeing. It isn't something that the board, the division, or the administration would support if it would have an adverse effect on Alaska's nurses, Alaskans, or state sovereignty. Plus, the legislature can always get us out of the Nurse Licensure Compact if we decide that it wasn't the right thing for Alaska. The fact is, joining the Nurse Licensure Compact has become more than a licensing issue. It's really a healthcare issue that licensing simply plays a part in. We've watched hospice clinics close, hospitals not have nearly enough staff, Alaska's nurses being asked to work 2 and 3 shifts in a row, causing early burnout, and we're just wondering how much longer can this continue for Alaska. So again, we don't think this is going to fix all of our vacancies, but it will make it easier. It will speed up getting nurses licensed and make it easier for people to come up to Alaska.
Senator Gray Jackson has a question. And then Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So from what I've heard during the last session, the board, Alaska Nursing Board, their concern, well, one of them, and I'm speaking for them, was that the loss of employees that are here, nurses that are here right now. And so when you met with them, did they voice that concern or other concerns? Because I'm really trying to figure out what their concern really is.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair to Senator Gray Jackson, I'd like to clarify your question, because you alluded to the Board of Nursing not being supportive. But I want to reiterate that the Alaska Board of Nursing is very much in support of joining the Nurse Licensure Compact. It's the Nurses Association.
I'm so sorry. I keep getting wrong. But I'm allergic to this room, as you can tell.
Well, we're almost done, so you can exit this room. If I may, I'm going to turn to Deputy Director Saviors. There was a survey that was done at the end of 2019 of nurses that provided some strong support for the Nurse Licensure Compact. And so, to be honest, we share a little bit of your confusion about the opposition, and we didn't see that in the survey results.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson. I don't want to speak for the association, especially considering we have sort of differing positions, and I feel that would be sort of a disservice to them. We understand we appreciate them a lot, and we work with them a lot. This is just one of those issues where we don't see eye to eye. We will say that in the survey that we did, we surveyed over 16,000 nurses at the end of 2019, strictly Alaska licensed nurses. 3,527 of those nurses responded. That's pretty good for a survey, right? We had a 92% that were in favor, 3% were the only amount that were opposed, 4% didn't have an opinion on it. We actually surveyed whether they were a member of the union during their nursing employment, and of those that were, 87% wanted to join the compact, only 6% didn't, and 8% said that they didn't have an opinion either way. Or excuse me, 87% did, 6% had no opinion, and 8% said that they would rather not join the compact. And so we're also a bit confused, as our data shows that nurses want this, not just the board, not just the government, you know, not just the hospitals. And so I don't want to speak to what the association's main concerns are. I think it's a conversation we'd like to continue to be able to have. But that's what our data is showing.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll try to make this quick because we're running out of time here. So you said that, you know, Alaska could always withdraw by changing our statutes. But, you know, practically speaking, this body is sort of designed for gridlock. So rather than make us have to go in and change, if this is something that is popular and something you're confident will be, you know, positive for the state, why not put a sunset on it and then there'd be political will to renew it? And if that's the case, I mean, certainly if you have 92% of nurses supporting it, it seems like that would be practical. What would be the appropriate length of that sunset? 2 years, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, thinking about how you would come in and out of relationship with this compact organization?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, thank you for that question. And it's a great suggestion, and certainly one that Mr. Kosin from the Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association put. And it's a way, if it would give people a level of comfort with the nurse licensure compact, adding a sunset date, as you indicated, you know, removes the need for action to be taken to exit from it. We would just need to take action to retain our membership. It would take a while to get things implemented. We would want to get through the period where those currently Alaskan licensed nurses who wanted to transition over to a multi-state license had a chance to do that. We'll have to get the regulations written and, you know, figure out the exact process for getting implemented. So I think we would want to give ourselves at least 2 years so that we had a decent length period where it was sort of functioning as it would continue to function into the future for assessment. If we did a year, I don't think we'd have more than a matter of months where we could really assess whether it was working. And, you know, we need to give it a minute to get past the pilot episode.
Thank you. And I, Mr. Chair, I'll just say that I think if this bill comes before us, that will be one of the things that's discussed. And so, if you know, it'll be useful to have more information on that when that time comes. But thank you very much for the answer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is our last slide. So here on slide 14, it tries to answer the question, what else can we do besides compacts? So we have quite a few outdated statutes that need to be cleaned up, statutes that require education from programs or organizations that no longer exist. There are other examples that are similar in nature. So Governor Dunleavy introduced a professional licensing reform bill in the 31st legislative session that cleaned up a lot of those statutes. And while we recognize that bill may have been a bit too large to fully understand, the division would be happy to work with any legislator who is interested to break off a small piece of it to tackle cleaning up the statutes. There's also the option of universal temporary licensure, which is where the division would be authorized to issue temporary licenses based on a license in good standing in another state so that a professional could get to work quickly, either temporarily or while they're working to obtain that permanent license here in Alaska. So all this would result in more applications and perhaps a bit more work. It would allow people to get to work more quickly. It would really be the next best thing besides compacts. The other thing we would say is involve us. If you're considering introducing a new licensing program or license type, or simply amending statutes for an existing licensing program, we always appreciate the opportunity to get involved early in the process so that we can advise on what may seem good in theory but would be very challenging for us to actually implement, or where when we might need a regulatory board if there was a new program that was under consideration for licensure versus a full an advisory board. So we're happy to assist with any of that work. The earlier, the better, in our opinion. The other thing that you could do to help is if you're willing to include some recruitment plugs, if you have constituent newsletters. We've actually gotten a few great staff who heard about vacancies through those newsletters, and so we would welcome the opportunity for that. And as Deputy Director Saviors mentioned, we have hired staff in a few places, but we don't currently have offices, so we're boldly going into the telework environment. So it doesn't matter where your district is, we might be interested in hiring your constituents. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I would just say we're open to any ideas, especially with me being new to the division. I have no sense that I have all the answers. So we would welcome, if you've got a great idea, fresh eyes can go a long way towards seeing things in a new light. And with that, that's the end of our presentation. We're happy to answer any additional questions, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any questions. But I just want to say thank you to both of you for this excellent presentation. And I think it's wonderful that you publicly thanked your employees. And I'd like to do the same. Thank you to all of you and all of your employees for a job well done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Just one final question for me. Is there a statute change needed to provide for universal temporary licensure? Or is that something that you can take care of through regulation?
Mr. Chair, that would require a statute change.
Very good. Also would just like to point out, I think it needs to be that, you know, with your 64% increase in the amount of licenses that you process, you've only added an additional, according to your slides, 7 long-term non-permanent positions to your division. That's an amazing amount of workload that has hit your division. Especially considering the vacancy factor that you guys have experienced recently and still a vacancy factor going forward of 14%. So that's a big deal, and you all need to be recognized and appreciated for your work. So indeed, thank you to all of you who have stuck around and stuck it out, and thank you for that work. And we look forward to supporting you as we move on, so we'll be in touch. One final thing, as far as the nurses go, they have said and continue to state that they think there are other things that the board can do and you all can do besides compacting. I would encourage you to get with them and have a mutual agreement on what those issues are or are not, and that will better inform legislators as we make decisions about compacting going forward. Because as we hear from you and folks in industry that, hey, we've tried everything. And then we hear from the Nurses Association and they say they haven't tried anything. Those two things don't align. And so if we could all just be looking at the same sheet of paper and just say, hey, yep, we did or we didn't, and here's why, then we can have clear answers on all those things going forward. Thank you all for joining us today, Senate Labor and Commerce. Glad you were here. Well, this committee will meet again Monday, February 13th, when we will hear from members of the public education community. As there is no further business to come before this committee, this meeting is adjourned at 3:05 p.m.